So I'd like to share with you first a couple of stories to illustrate this possibility. One of the stories comes from the Gnostic texts during the time of Christ. And I'm going to use Christ as an example because his life was focused on the technology of compassion and forgiveness. So this, clearly, I'm making a distinction here. This is not about religion, and religions came later and were built around these understandings. This is in the purity of the teaching of forgiveness and compassion. There's a story in the Gnostic traditions of a time when Jesus came to a village, and a woman came to him who had been born a leper. She'd had leprosy all of her life, and she asked him to be healed. She said, "Master, please heal me." She said, "I have had leprosy all of my life, and it's a mistake. I'm not supposed to have this. This isn't why I came into this world." She said, "I have been hideously ugly. So hideous, in fact, I've never had a friend. I've never known a man. Animals cower in my presence. I am so hideous, they won't even look at me. Please heal me of this affliction." And Jesus looked at her and he asked her two questions. First, he asked her if she believed. He said, "Do you believe in me? Do you believe in my Father?" And this is interesting because he made no distinction between he walking this earth and the creative force that is responsible for his time in this world. He made no distinction between that. He said, "Do you believe in me? Do you believe in my Father?" And she said, "Yes." And then he asked her, he said, "What have you learned in your illness?" And she became angry. She said, "Learned? What do you mean, what have I learned? I haven't learned anything. I'm so ugly. I've never had a friend. I've never had a pet. I've never known love in my life because I have this affliction. I've learned nothing." And he looked at her and he said, "Because you've learned nothing, then your illness is still to serve you." And he did not heal her. Is it possible that he loved her so much in that moment, he was willing to allow her the latitude of the experience that she was having until it served her? And that opens the doorway. That's the beginning of compassion. And I offer this for a very good reason. Compassion is not about complacency. Compassion is actually a very powerful form of being proactive in life. A few years ago, and I believe there are no accidents, so when things like this happen, they happen for a reason. I was with a group of friends in front of a television watching the 6 o'clock news. Coming across the CNN newswire was a story, the first reports that approximately 10,000 Rwandans had been found massacred by their own people, lying mutilated on the rural roadsides. And they suspected there were more hidden in the jungles, at least 10,000 people. I was with three individuals that evening as the story came across, and I looked at each of them to see how they responded. There was one gentleman that was sitting with us. He had just kind of gotten into New Age kinds of thinking. In that mode of thinking, he believed in this complacency of just whatever happens, happens, and you know that's all there is to it. So I said, "How do you feel about what you've just seen?" And he said, "Well, about what?" I said, "You just saw in the news 10,000 Rwandans lost their lives." He said, "Oh, you know," he said, "that's their karma." He said, "On some level, when they came in this world, they had to know that was going to happen. That was their karma." He looked at his watch and said, "You guys hungry? Let's go get a bite to eat." And that was the way he dealt with the horror of what he had seen on the television. There was a woman who was sitting next to him. She had a very different response. I asked her, I said, "Now, how do you feel about what you've seen?" And before I even got the words out of my mouth, she was pounding on the table. She was angry. She said, "When are we going to stop this? When are we going to send in the Marines to take out the people who are taking the lives so that we can once and for all put a stop to this thing happening in our world?" And there was another woman that got up and left, and I followed her into the kitchen, and she had her back to me as I walked in. She was looking out the window over the kitchen sink. And I asked her, I said, "How do you feel?" And she turned around, looked at me, and she had big tears in her eyes, and they hadn't rolled down her face yet. And she had a puzzled look, and she says, "I don't know." She said, "I don't like what happened. I don't want any more people to die. I don't want to kill the soldiers that killed the people." And she said, "On the other hand, there's a part of me that misses those people, and I never even knew them on a personal basis. She said, my world feels different knowing that they're no longer in this world. And she said, there's got to be another way to deal with this in our world without taking additional lives. These three people represented the three possibilities. The first gentleman who said, oh, it was their karma, let's go get a bite to eat. I wasn't inside of him, and I don't know for certain. But I suspect that that was a denial coming from him, that what he witnessed had hurt him on such a deep level, he didn't even know what to do with it. So he denied those feelings and said it was their karma, let's go get a pizza. The second woman, she certainly wasn't in denial, she was angry. She was in polarity thinking. She was in the thinking of the right and the wrong and the good and the bad, which is the same thinking that led to the massacre in the first place. Her choice to go and kill the soldiers that killed the people is what perpetuates these cycles again and again and again. Not right, wrong, good, or bad. It simply is a possibility. I'm illustrating possibilities of ways of responding to these things. And the third woman, as I followed her into the kitchen, she felt the emotion. She missed the people. She wasn't angry on the one hand. On the other hand, she was searching for a higher option, a greater response, something transcending what we've always done in the past. And I believe that is the threshold. That was the doorway to the possibility of compassion, because she wasn't in judgment. She wasn't blaming. The logic tempered with the seven-layer liquid crystal oscillator of the heart, once again, because our heart is made of seven alternating layers of striated muscle, one on top of another, liquid crystal. Because of the fluid content of the cells, it functions as a crystalline material, although it is not in a hardened state. It's a liquid crystal, an oscillator, because it is through our heart that we tune to these reference vibrations, this fundamental frequency of our Mother Earth. When Earth's pulse, 7.8 cycles per second, when that changes to 8 and to 9 and 11 cycles per second, it's our heart that perceives it and then sends the signals to our brain and the rest of our bodies that tune us to our Earth. So our heart functions in a very real sense as a biological oscillator. So the logic of our left and right brain, tempered by the wisdom of our heart, is what allows and opens the possibility of compassion in our lives.